Welcome back to another episode of City Hall Pass. I'm Kapel Lungani, counsel to the mayor of New York City. We created this forum, the first of its kind in New York City, to give you, the public, a unique window into the highest levels of our city government. We interview New York City's finest public servants and get them to open up in a way that is both deeply personal and insightful. And on its best days, we hope that our podcast is equal parts educational and inspiring. And now I want to introduce my two co-hosts today, two brilliant women who inspire me every day, Bess Chu and Kate Coughlin.
Thanks, Kapel. Happy to be here. This is Bess Chu. I'm currently Chief of Staff to the Office of the Counsel to the Mayor.
Hi, I'm Kate Coughlin, and I currently serve as Deputy Counsel for the Office of the Counsel to the Mayor.
I want to introduce our guest today, the 33rd Fire Commissioner of New York City, Daniel A. Nigro. Commissioner Nigro was appointed by Mayor Bill de Blasio in 2014. He's only the sixth individual to hold every rank in the department in the agency's history. Commissioner Nigro's long career with the department started in Manhattan at Engine 21, where he served as a firefighter beginning in 1969. Upon his promotion to Deputy Chief in 1993, he returned to the field, and a year later was appointed Deputy Assistant Chief. Commissioner Nigro was instrumental in merging the Emergency Medical Service into the FDNY. Following the merger, he became the Chief in Charge of EMS. In 1997, he was promoted to Chief of Operations, overseeing all operations and training for more than 14,000 uniformed fire and EMS personnel. Following the September 11, 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center, he was appointed Chief of Department. Commissioner Nigro was responsible for overseeing all rescue and recovery operations at the World Trade Center site and the beginning of the unprecedented rebuilding of the department. As Chief of Department, Commissioner Nigro held the highest uniformed rank, overseeing all major uniformed FDNY bureaus. We spoke to the commissioner about his over 50-year journey from firefighter to department head, his experience working through the tragedies of 9/11, and more recently, how he continues to lead New York's bravest through the COVID-19 pandemic. We hope you enjoy.
Without further ado, I want to welcome the commissioner of the Fire Department of New York City, Daniel Nigro. Commissioner, thank you so much for joining us on City Hall Pass. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Commissioner, you grew up in the FDNY, and your father was a firefighter. Did you always imagine that was going to be your destiny? You were going to be in the FDNY no matter what?
Not at all. I guess my mother and father wanted to ensure that I went to college because no one else in the family ever had. I knew a lot about the fire department because my father was a captain, and we talked about the fire department every night at dinner. I was going to school and wasn't really sure. My father said, why don't you take the test? You never know. And the rest is history. I'm very, very grateful that my father didn't push me in the direction, but gently led me in the direction.
If you didn't join the FDNY or had not passed that test, what was your backup plan?
Well, I was going to Baruch College, and I was studying economics, and I thought I would make millions of dollars on Wall Street.
Well, you ended up becoming a firefighter, and when you were young, you actually witnessed the 23rd Street fire, a five-alarm fire that resulted in the tragic deaths of 12 firefighters. How did that incident in particular affect your decision or commitment to become a firefighter?
I mentioned I was at Baruch College as a young man, and at the time we were located just on Lexington Avenue and 23rd Street. So I heard early in the morning, my father had said there was this terrible fire right down the street from school. I went in early and stood in the park across the street and watched as these hundreds of firefighters were there, and they removed the bodies of their 12 brothers. Later in the week, I went up to stand in the street on Fifth Avenue when they had funeral for 10 of them at St. Patrick's Cathedral in St. Thomas. You know, really what it showed me was how devoted they were to one another. I always knew it was a dangerous job because I heard it from my father all my life and worried about him when he went to work. But seeing that scene on 23rd Street and later witnessing the very solemn funeral at Fifth Avenue where thousands of firefighters lined up, it really impressed me. And soon after that, I did take the test for firefighter.
Commissioner, you've devoted your entire life to public service. What does public service mean to you?
Well, I think we take an oath of office, which I recall very vividly being at Fashion High School on the west side of Manhattan almost 52 years ago. And you raise your right hand and you say, I solemnly swear to protect life and property in the city of New York. We impress that upon everybody today still. You know, people have taken this oath for 150 years. Uh-huh. It's a very serious thing. And we've proved over and over, most certainly and awfully on 9/11 20 years ago, we will stand by that oath. So that's really the entire basis of the job, is to give yourself before others.
Was your goal always to be commissioner?
I think, you know, my goal usually was whatever the next exam was. If I was a captain, I'd say, well, I'm going to take the test for battalion chief and then take the test for deputy chief. But commissioner was, when I came on, it was a civilian. It was he was a fire marshal. Then he became commissioner. Then we've had civilian commissioners. We've had people that came up the ranks, like myself or Commissioner Cassano. Until I was chief of department after 9/11, that thought really never occurred to me, that I was always a uniformed member of the fire department.
Commissioner, on September 11th, you were serving as Chief of Operations, which is the third in command for the department. When we think of September 11th, 20 years later, nobody in New York City, nobody in the world forgets the heroes of the FDNY, all the first responders, your colleagues, who saved countless lives that day. How did September 11th change your life?
Well, I think for all of us who survived the day at the scene, there's, you know, we had a life before 9/11 and we have the post 9/11 life, and it really is a life-changing experience. Certainly, everyone would, I assume, have in their head, as I do, that life can change unexpectedly in a heartbeat. You might think everybody should know that because of what goes on around us each and every day, but until you've actually been very close to what happened that day and survived it somehow, now you know how it feels to think you were not going to survive and you ended up surviving. So in that regard, you always have that in the back of your mind. I think there's a certain sadness we all carry, that we have plenty of good days in the last 20 years. And I've had a slew of them with my four grandchildren and every other experience I've had. But you carry this weight, I say, of a little bit of sadness always. And as the anniversaries approach, and this year more than ever, really, it's earlier than ever. I've said in the past that once August comes, we all get this heaviness. We know that around the corner is the events of 9/11 and the strong remembrances. This year, it's come much earlier. And I've talked to other folks that were there. And this year, we're feeling it already. And I expect this to be a difficult summer for all of us in the department, especially those of us who were there, to get through and to, you know, fulfill our responsibilities of recognizing those we lost and their families and doing the right thing every year that we do. This year will be particularly tough.
You just spoke about how it changed you, how it affected you. How did it change the department?
Well, we looked at ourselves. The department decided we did a lot of things right, of course. We rescued 25,000 people, evacuated that building. We ran out of times, really. That's what happened. Otherwise, we would have gotten more people out. But we realized there were certain things that we could have done better. So we looked at each and every piece, whether it was our equipment, our strategies, our communications, and made a lot of changes. So we have a much more robust communication system. We have different strategies to attack different types of buildings or occurrences. We improved training immensely, whether it's at the very early stages of people's career or through their career. So now we have Fire Officers Management Institute with Columbia University that most of our upper echelon folks have gone through. We've sent people to the Naval Graduate School out in California. They've gotten master's degrees there. We've sent people to work with West Point. So we've made our department much more robust. Maybe the biggest thing I noticed coming back as commissioner was our incident management team, which we learned from the U.S. Forest Service as we worked down at the World Trade Center site for months and months, how to handle situations that last for days and days and weeks and months, because our department generally tidies things up in a matter of hours and moves on to the next operation. After 9/11, we were in charge of that operation from September 11, 2001 to the end of May 2002, 24/7. And we had never done anything like that before. The Forest Service, with their experience with wildland fires, came in here and we worked with them. And I think now we have the premier incident management team in the United States, and we've sent our team members everywhere. And when things go wrong or need to be managed here in the city that sometimes seem to be out of our purview, we're perfectly willing to involve ourselves, whether it's in most recently vaccinating people at home. That early project was managed by the incident management team, whether it was finding water towers where a Legionnaire's disease was present. Our incident management team managed that. So the department is extraordinarily strong right now and able to tackle things that many people would not assume the fire department has any skill at or interest in. But what we have interest in is solving problems and serving the public. So we're perfectly willing to get our feet wet in just about anything.
The FDNY has some of the bravest public servants, men and women in the world. On 9/11, in terms of that response, what were you most proud of?
Well, someone asked one of our chiefs a question the other day. He said, how many people refused orders to enter either building? And I said to them, I know that answer, and the answer is zero. Whether it was the youngest firefighter or the most senior person on the scene, who I could tell from the looks on their faces, had a very strong suspicion that they would be going into the building and not coming out, people did what they swore they would do. I think at the end of the day, as sad as I was about it, I could take pride in the fact that they don't call the fire department members the bravest for nothing.
You were at one point the first chief of EMS at FDNY, and you played a very critical role in the EMS and FDNY merger. Can you tell us a little bit about the challenges of the process of that merger and why it was such an important move for the department?
I saw the merger as another chance. As I said before, the way fire department always needs to adapt, we needed to adapt to the needs of the city at that time. And at that time, the EMS system had just over 2,000 folks trying to do an impossible workload, and they just couldn't keep up. And the fire department had, you know, more than 10,000 members and 200 some odd locations. And we felt if we could train the firefighters to do medical work and bring EMS into the department and integrate them into our department, we could serve the public in a much, much broader way. Of course, I believed in it, and a few other people believed in it. Most of the members of the fire department were not too thrilled with it. Most of the members of EMS were not too thrilled with it. You know, they called it a hostile takeover. So trying to get people to on board with that this is the future of the fire department wasn't easy. You know, it just took determination on my part. Liz Cascio, who's now my chief of staff, was an instructor, a lead instructor at the academy, which didn't make her popular with her peers in EMS, teaching firefighters how to do medical work. And she had to have the thickest skin and the real will to get this done each and every morning to explain to our firefighters why they needed to learn how to do this. And she did. And we did. One of the earliest positive signs we had that we went around and told our members one morning, soon after we taught the firefighters, in a firehouse in Rockaway, firefighters went out to the front of the firehouse and found the fire officer unconscious at the desk, wasn't breathing, no heartbeat, and they brought him back to life. We had this officer that was now our poster boy. Not only will we be serving the public, we'll be serving one another, that you learn these skills. As tough as it is now, our response times are better than they were prior to the merger. Our ability to get help in a big way to people of the city was proven once again through the entire COVID period, which we're not out of yet. Our ability to transport even Ebola patients safely was proven. We now have a fire department that saves more lives. When I started in the department, over 300 people would die each year in fires, and we've kept it under 100 for many years now. And a lot of that has to do with both better equipment our firefighters have, their ability to rescue people, and the fact that when they get them out of the building, there's somebody there with the skills that can even bring back the dead, so to speak. People come out of the building not breathing, no heartbeat, and our EMS folks get them back. And it's been a remarkable transformation. We would rescue somebody 50 years ago, bring them out of the building, and then what? Well, now things have changed. So I think the fire department of today, and I say, you know, not that we're better, we've learned from each generation before us and we keep improving it. And that's, I hope 20 years from now, the fire department is much better than it is today. I mean, I will certainly take that as a compliment and hope that people continue to do what they've done for 150 years, was make it better for the next generation.
FDNY does have a world-renowned counseling service that has traveled around the country to places like Sandy Hook after school shootings. Can you tell us a little bit more about the division?
I was chief of health services, and we started a peer counseling unit more than 20 years ago. And lo and behold, there was a fire called Happy Land in the Bronx, in which our members came upon a scene of 80 folks who had been murdered in an arson fire that was just surreal. It was very difficult on them, and we immediately activated this newly formed peer counseling because members were more apt to open up to one another than to professionals, especially at that time. And each and every unit that responded, peer counselors visited them to talk it out. And that's been expanded upon and expanded upon and expanded upon. And I think all first responders, you hear the same thing, whether it's law enforcement or fire departments, people like to be considered rough and tough, and maybe I don't need help, but they certainly do. We kind of ensure that they at least have the opportunity to get help and try to walk them in that direction to get help and explain why it's not frowned upon at all. It's really, it's a sign of bravery to actually get that help so you can continue in your profession in the way that you should, rather than try to contain this, what's inside you.
Commissioner, the mayor appointed you in 2014 as commissioner of the FDNY. What was your vision when you came to the department, and what do you think were the biggest challenges you faced?
Well, I knew, you know, the department had just been through a federal court case in which the federal government made a case that they were being unfair to a certain percentage of our population in the way they recruited and tested and hired. And the department put up a defense. The judge ruled that the department was wrong and they needed to change. The administration at the time appealed that decision. And when our mayor was elected, he felt very strongly, and he dropped that appeal. And I felt that I could have an impact here, that I believed in the judge's decision, which I don't think was the common opinion within the fire department. But I guess felt that I could be helpful in that I had been there, done that. Members would know, I didn't come from another planet and be dropped here to do this, but that I was one of them, and we could have equality and excellence at the same time. And we do, and we've pulled it off, and we're doing the right thing in a better way. I had no illusions that this would be easy or universally well-received by the membership of the fire department, but I think we've come a long way, and to the benefit of the people of our city. You know, our department gets better and better, and finally, a little more diverse.
So in 2017, Kate and I actually had the opportunity to go to the Fire Training Academy on Randall's Island and be firefighters for the day. We wore the gear, but only carried one piece of equipment. It was an incredible experience. I remember the first exercise we did, which was going into a pitch black room, crawling in and trying to figure out where you were and then how to get back to the exit and the teamwork involved. It felt impossible.
Yeah, mine was the last exercise where you crawl on your hands and knees. I don't think I'd ever experienced true darkness where you literally, like, you can't see the hand in front of your face. And then you are crawling on your hands and knees, like heat unlike you've ever experienced. And then you have to crawl around and get out of the building. It was a really amazing experience. And interestingly, two men on our team didn't complete the whole training, but all the women on the team did. So
I don't want to know their names.
Anyways, we only experienced a fraction of what true firefighters do every day, but we both just left with this immense feeling of gratitude for what firefighters do. What do you wish the public knew about the work of firefighters?
I think, as you described, you know, we do put various people through this firefighter for a day program. We certainly can't put the entire population through, but firefighting is not what they see on television. You know, we don't walk around and are able to see everything around us as the TV fires are or movie fires. It's a big difference. It's not a job for the claustrophobic, as you say, because it's a dark world that we work in. It is a job of teamwork. And we just had Medal Day where individuals were cited for bravery. And every one of them says the same thing. You know, I didn't do this alone. You know, the person that was lowered off the roof had a team on the roof that knew how to do that to lower them safely. When we go into these dark areas, we don't go alone. We have rules that prohibit us from going alone because it's so dangerous. And it is a job that requires the teamwork, team efforts of large numbers of people. and it requires stamina. For certain positions of a firefighter, the entire package of equipment can weigh 100 pounds. So telling somebody this is your job, that you're toting, you know, counting your protective gear and the air pack that you're wearing and other tools, 100 pounds seems incredible, but people do it. It is a job for the physically fit. It is a job for people who like to work with others and accept a teamwork situation. And we pride ourselves in teams. So you'll see our units, every unit in the fire department has a unit patch that identifies their company number, and they're very proud of their individual team. And this team concept, similar to you've heard soldiers fight not for the country, but for the soldier on either side of them. You know, firefighters have this pride in their unit that makes them want to be better than the next unit and pushes them forward where others might say, I've had enough. That's not in our code. You know, I've had enough.
Individuals that become firefighters, I think, gravitate towards service and selflessness. In managing these people, you instill teamwork by ensuring loyalty and bravery. How do you balance those qualities and skills with ensuring they have the critical risk assessment tools they need to succeed?
Well, our chief officers, and we're just going through this again with all of our chief officers, are really tasked with the safety of our members, of ensuring that they get an overall picture of the incident that we're at and measure risk versus reward. So there are three children trapped on the fourth floor and a frantic mother in the lobby. There is no risk we will not take to make it to those children. We come to a vacant store at 4 a.m. or a auto body shop with fire showing through the roof. This is a fire where excessive risk is not necessary. And that's really the job of the person in charge, and that's our chief officers, and they take that very seriously. And that's our whole formula, risk versus reward.
When everyone was isolating at home, firefighters didn't have that opportunity. More so, firefighters gathered in firehouses. So, you know, one case of COVID could turn into an entire team being infected with COVID. How did you motivate your team during that time to show up to work when the risk was so high?
You know, like everything else that we do, no one had to be forced on the apparatus on 9/11. People that weren't even working went to the scene. We did not have to do anything to ensure that our people came to work. You know, we've been through this like with snowstorms. We've explained, you know, they say, well, how are you going to get the people to work? I say, my people will show up at work. Everyone will be at work. And they are. A lot of our people got sick. More than 50% of the members of the fire department got COVID. Extremely out of the chart from the norm in the country. As many people in the country that got sick, which is a huge number, the percentage within the department was even higher. Most everyone that got COVID is back at work. Unfortunately, a few of our members got so sick, like others, and we lost some. We lost one firefighter, we lost five EMTs to COVID, and a number of our civilians. Still a low percentage, 16 people out of over 17,000 in the workforce. Within the firehouse and EMS stations, it was very difficult because one person with COVID could infect the work crew. We tried to limit the pods, so to speak, of this firehouse, that firehouse, and not moving people around like we usually do in the initial stages because we were worried we'd lose our workforce. Not that they didn't want to come to work, but they couldn't come to work. While our medical leave went up, spiked high as the medical leaves in the city spiked high, thankfully, the vast majority of our workforce came back to work pretty rapidly.
You mentioned you oversee EMS, which dispatches ambulances for 911 calls. The volume of work your agency saw during COVID increased unimaginably. Talk a little bit about your experience through COVID and what were some of those greatest challenges?
What we were most concerned with was our members getting sick and not being able to do what we're tasked to do. The volume got so high for one period of time that we were able to bring in ambulances, you know, thanks to the courage of people around the country, amazingly so. Crews from all over the country came here, 200 at one time, ambulances, and all of our low acuity calls they were answering so that our people could answer the high acuity calls. One of the most serious problems we had was time after time, we were getting to the scene and people had died. The cardiac arrest numbers went through the roof, and it was our members who had to tell a family that there was nothing they could do. And as many as 8 or 10 times, some of our people on one shift were faced with this. It was, you know, it was very difficult. And again, our counseling services were stretched to the max, dealing with what these units had to do. It was quite the challenge to keep everyone motivated to come to work. They did. They were self-motivated. They came to work despite the difficulties of the task. And it was early on, more so on the EMTs and medics, somewhat on the firefighters. It continued through with the firefighters. Now they're back to, for months, they've been back to full capacity.
So the department has been on the front lines of the COVID response, including now getting people vaccinated. FDNY has been in charge of getting homebound persons vaccinated. Can you tell our listeners about the importance of getting vaccinated?
Well, as I sit here today, having been vaccinated early on, I can say the relief that I felt, especially after 2 weeks after that second shot. I'm a person over 70 who falls into certain categories, and I was going to work interacting with folks all through this, and it was a big concern. My entire family, from my 12-year-old grandson on up, got their vaccinations when they were eligible. I think it's what will bring us back to what was normal or as close as possible. I don't understand why people don't want to get vaccinated. There are some side effects that go away. Some people don't even get any side effects. I had some. 2 days later, you feel fine and you feel as if you've been reborn, somewhat worry-free, that this will not be a problem for you. And you can go back to being more productive. You can go back to having more fun. You can go back to living, so to speak. And I encourage every person to look beyond the whatever conspiracy theories, rumors, and go to the science, as our doctors tell us. Look at the science, listen to the doctors, and get vaccinated.
Commissioner, you've had an extraordinary career, both as a firefighter and now as the head of the FDNY. Your father was a firefighter. If he were here today and we were interviewing him, and we asked him what he would be most proud of in your career, what do you think he would say?
Thankfully, my father lived a long life, and he was there when I was sworn in. I think he was proud. You know, my father was never one to be boastful. I think he would be proud that I followed his directions on work hard, do the right thing, he always told me. I always use a quote. He said it was from St. Augustine. I'm not sure. Right is right, even if no one is doing it, and wrong is wrong, even if everybody's doing it. So I think he'd feel I did the right thing.
Commissioner, what advice would you give to your successor, the next commissioner of the FDNY?
Have that moral compass that directs you where you know the department needs to go, and people will follow you. Be a leader. Don't be a manager. Just point the way, then get out of their way so they can do what it is that needs to be done without your constant interference, but constantly show the way.
So, it's early in the morning, so I think it's time for our classic happy hour game. How do you like your Daniel Negronis? All right, sound the alarm, because this game is a surefire way to get you lit. This classic aperitif is sure to light a spark. But instead of the classic drink of three equal parts, this Daniel Negroni is made of two parts with an orange you glad you decided to come today slice. I hope we aren't on the rocks after this game. All right, let's get hosed on Daniel Negronis. All right, so we're going to give you two options, and you're going to pick one. Mets or Yankees?
Yankees.
Dog or cat?
Dogs.
Bayside or Whitestone?
Ooh, well, Bayside.
Chianti or Montepulciano?
Vino Nobile di Montepulciano.
Engine or truck?
I'm an engine man.
Okay, and this concludes the first and last game of How Do You Like Your Daniel Negronis?
I want to thank the extraordinary commissioner of the FDNY for joining us today and educating us on the FDNY, the courage, the commitment of the firefighters across this city and their exceptional leader. On behalf of over 8 million New Yorkers, Commissioner, I want to thank you for your extraordinary service and what you do every day to protect all of us.
My pleasure.
I want to thank our guest, the 33rd Fire Commissioner of New York City, Daniel Negro. Commissioner Negro and all his colleagues at the FDNY are true New York City heroes. It was an honor to sit down with him, and it gave me even greater insight into why we should be and are so grateful for the FDNY. We hope you enjoyed this conversation and look forward to talking to you soon on another episode of City Hall Pass.
This podcast is brought to you by the Office of the Counsel to the Mayor of New York City.